Welcome back to Love, Sweat, and Tears. Last episode, Dr. Bruce Gehring gave us a masterclass, is what I'm going to call it, in leading with heart and building a culture of trust. And so if you missed part one, it's not super long. I would highly recommend you recommend you going back to hear it. All right. So today we're building on that foundation to look forward. And how do we prepare our students and our educators for the age of AI and a rapidly changing world? And so let's jump back in. So let's zoom out now, Bruce, or Dr. Gehring, about when you look at the educational landscape, what's a change that just genuinely excites you about the future of learning? And there's a lot of stuff that does not excite us right now, right? About the future of learning, when we look at our state and, you know, different things going on, but there still is hope. And so what are you genuinely excited about within the future of learning?
So this may be counterintuitive, and I'm not sure it's exactly what you're looking for, but I'm a huge Brené Brown fan, and when I do her values exercise, I come out with two things, and those two things are hope and future generations. Mm-hmm. And that's what I'm most excited about as I watch this next generation of young people working through our system. And what we've attached ourselves to because of the really rapidly changing world mm-hmm. that we live in. And it's not only rapidly changing, but it's extremely complex at the same time. And so we've really attached to this idea that A.J. Giuliani put out, which is that our job is not to prepare students for something. Our job is to help students prepare themselves for anything. And so when educators understand this mindset shift, this really paradigm shift, this transformation of how do we get kids to really own their own learning? Mm-hmm. And how do we get them to connect to what they're interested in and then start to develop those interests into passions over time mm-hmm. through a lot of hard work, through a lot of responsibility, through a lot of discomfort and deep mm-hmm. diving into the learning? Then we start to see kids ignite. And when they ignite, there's no stopping them because then they want to learn and they know how to do it, that's the future.
Wow. So in thinking about that, on the flip side, like what's a foundational, timeless principle, and you talked a little bit about this, of good education that we must fiercely protect no matter how much technology changes?
We have to fiercely protect the fact that we're in the talent development business and talent gets developed by human beings, not by machines. And so, yes, we should embrace AI and yes, we should embrace technology and we should use it for everything that it's worth and what it can do. But we should not mistake it for something that it's not, which is a human being with feelings and emotions and understanding of other human beings. Because in our system, as large as we are, every interaction counts. And there are billions of interactions mm-hmm. that are happening every single day between the human beings. One of those interactions goes wrong and it has a profound downstream effect. And so we have to make sure that our humans understand that these interactions are the most critical thing that happens in our system every day.
Wow. Relationships, right? The building of relationships, which happens
yes,
with
ma'am.
Those human interactions. So thinking about just the actual pace of everything, the pace of change, it just feels faster than ever. And so for leaders that are listening to us right now, how do you steer the ship in what feels like a constant storm without burning out your people, right?
And again, I have to say that it really does come down to ownership. So it used to be that several hardworking people in a great collaborative environment could run large organizations. Mm-hmm. And that's just no longer true.
Right.
It requires every member of the organization to own their part of it. And in our case, in public schools, that includes the students. So it's not okay for us to say now that it's our job to prepare these students for something. It's that will never work. Things are changing too quickly, and it's way too overwhelming. And so we have to start to build the responsibility for some of that learning, and really make sure that our kids are taking that responsibility. That means we have to help them to get ready for that. It's not something that naturally comes to them. It's something that has to get scaffolded over time, but we have to be very intentional about scaffolding that over time. And it starts as young as pre-kindergarten, or as early as we get them. Those kids are capable of starting to set their own goals and starting to understand who they are as human beings, and starting to know what their interests are, and starting to develop their passions. And it has to start as early as that, obviously with a lot of adult intervention and help. But that has to also then get scaled back over time. So by the time they're entering ninth grade and going on their high school final 4-year journey, they're doing a lot of that on their own, with our facilitation and nudging and support, but not with our necessarily clear direction, if that makes any sense.
Oh, I believe it was last spring you spoke at South by Southwest. You were a part of a EDU topic, talk. And AI is big and scary. You know that. I mean, people, in my experience and just interacting with educators, I feel like educators in the realm of, after 30 years in education, the people that I probably talk with a lot, many have a little bit of a wait and see approach, where they talk about AI being big and scary. But it's also an exciting topic on everyone's mind. And you spoke about this at South by Southwest. And so, for a teacher or for a principal who feels overwhelmed, what would you say is the first small tangible step that they could take to begin exploring AI in a way that helps, not hinders learning?
Yeah, so I think the first thing I'll say is that AI is not new. AI has been around for a lot longer than most people realize and anticipate. I will also say that you don't need to be scared of it, because you use AI every single day, whether you know it or not. So if you ever use a Google Map or any kind of iPhone map or Android map or whatever mapping software you use, you're using AI, and you're using it highly effectively, because it's telling you where the traffic is, and it's telling you what's predicting to come up. It's telling you all kinds of things. So that's just one example of where we use it already, and we're not scared of it. We use it quite fluently, and we accept it, and it's fine, because we don't think about it like AI. I think people think that ChatGPT is AI. That is just one tiny little piece of what's actually happening. And yes, we have to be cautious. And yes, I think we should develop guidelines. And yes, I think we should be very careful of the ethical implications of AI. But I don't think we should be scared of it. I think we should start to embrace it, and use it for the incredible things that it can do to help us. So if it can shortcut the work that we do that's administrative, and that can get us further quicker, then yes, we should do that. If it can help me to find better questions to ask at a deeper level for my kids in the classroom, then yes, I should get it to do that for me. If it can help me find ideas for better ways to connect students at a deeper level with real-world applications and projects, and yes, I should get it to do that. I should get it to help me. We have in Leander ISD have adopted a particular vendor who's helping us with what is called a walled garden AI. And the neat part of that is, and part of the scary part of AI, is this idea that all of my private information is somehow getting out into the bigger Ethernet, and I'm not protected in that situation, and maybe my kids are not protected. And so when you get a walled garden AI, it's a tool that can help you just as much as an open AI system can, but it's protected, right? And it's keeping your data private and secure, and it's making sure that you're not open to those kinds of of ethical transgressions that you might be on OpenAI. So I would encourage folks to start thinking about that. What are the tools? Who are the vendors out there that can help you to do the things that you need to do with AI, but in a safe environment where nobody has to fear it? And the way that we did that here is we just offered it. So we didn't say, here's a new system, we want you to use it. We just said, here's something that might help you. Have a look at it. If you like it, start using it. And we started with teachers only. And so we just kind of dropped it out there. Within 2 years, we now have almost 3,000 teachers who've picked it up voluntarily and are using it highly effectively every single day, just because they've seen the power of what it can do to help them to do a better job in the classroom. And that's what they want to do. They want to do a better job in the classroom with our kids.
You shared two or three ideas on how you did it in Leander ISD. And one thing that really just stuck with me, Bruce, is that, which is a different professional development model, is that you said there was a word, we offered it, and whoever wanted to take advantage of it, which I know that about your leadership style, that you're not a top down, you're more of a flat organization. And so the power in that offering of rather than mandating, tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, absolutely. But we also did it in combination with something else that has been critically important. And so we've always been a professional learning communities district, a PLC district. But this last year, we really took stock of what does that mean and how do we really empower people inside that system? And what we discovered was that it's really a cascade of PLCs. And so we identified every collaborative team in our district, and we're a district of about 42,000 students in 48 campuses. We discovered we have around 700 identifiable collaborative teams, and they operate in a cascade, right? And what I mean by that is, for example, you know, your third grade teachers at Fabian Elementary School operate as a collaborative team, but they also operate then inside their campus. So at their campus, they have a collaborative team that's a leadership team that involves their principal, their IC, their assistant principal, their counselor, right? And so what that team does cascades down into what that third grade team can do. It's also very difficult to train every of the 3,000 odd teachers that we have on in the district, but it is possible to really go deep in professional learning with the 700 collaborative team leaders. And so we have developed a cascading professional learning plan that really works the team leaders of each of these collaborative teams in the right timing frame so that they can cascade the learning from one collaborative team to the next one all the way down to that final third grade team. And then in the third grade team, that leader is responsible for developing all the people on that team so that each of those can then lead their learning organization, which is their classroom, right? And so there's this really beautiful system now that helps people to very systematically make sure that they get the learning that they need at the exact right time when they need it, in such a way that they can utilize these tools that we're offering to them. And so we have a lot less district-wide given sit and get kind of professional learning now, and a lot more of this collaborative team-based, how does my team get what they need? So we're offering a lot of different things at a lot of different levels, because every collaborative team is at a different place and has different needs. And so now they can choose what it is that they need, and they can go and execute that at the right time in real time. And it's starting to make a huge difference.
You don't hear that a lot. So it makes me wonder how, you know, you could think through that there's a danger of there being an equity gap widening if not everyone is a part of this leadership piece, right? And so how do you stay, I don't want to call vigilant. I feel like that sounds negative, but how do you stay on top of making sure that every student is able to be served within this framework, not just those that are at the campus or have the leaders that are the most innovative? Because I know one of your core values is making sure that every student, every child has that opportunity. And so what do you do? How do you bring everyone into the fold without being a top down?
Yeah, it's an excellent question. So 6 years ago, we asked our community, what are the hopes and dreams that you have for your children? We listened to that and we continue to listen to that as it modifies over time. We then developed a set of core beliefs that said, this is what we believe as a system. And the board adopted those core beliefs. Turned into a vision and a mission and goal areas and eventually into a five-year strategic plan. We're now entering year four of that first five-year cycle. Inside that, there is alignment between everything we do. So the strategic plan has alignment to the district improvement plan, because really the strategic plan's a five-year cycle. Mm-hmm. The district improvement plan's the 1 year inside that cycle that we're doing this year, but it's completely aligned with the strategic plan. Those are aligned to the campus improvement plans. That's aligned to our community-based accountability system and the report that we give back to the community every year on how we're doing. That's aligned to the superintendent evaluation and to the board's goals and the board evaluation that we do. So everything is aligned to everything else, and we're constantly cross-checking, are we still aligned and are we doing the right things in the right places at the right time to get the result that we want? And we're constantly measuring those leading measures at every quarter and reporting those back to the board, and then making adjustments as necessary to make sure that by the time we get the lag measures, those are coming out the way that we want them to. As part of that, the fourth goal that we have in our strategic plan is educational access. And we developed an office of educational access in our district and have a chief, a high-level administrator in charge of that organization. That part of the organization, and I will use your word, vigilantly monitors the data at a feeder pattern level. So we have six feeder patterns to six high schools in our district of, are we continuing to close the gaps? Are we continuing to remove barriers to access to every group of students in our district? And we drill that down at the campus level then to individual students. And so we have seen a phenomenal change in the leading measures. And what I mean by that is the access that our students have to various different aspects that we've identified as important to their ultimate success. And we've seen that across student groups, across economic status, across every cross-section that we look at. And so when we say each and every, we don't just say each and every, we mean each and every. And we're holding ourselves accountable to, are we addressing each and every issue?
That is very insightful in the way that your district has strategically mapped out really supporting every child. In a district of, what did you say, 42,000 students? So is there any aha moment you want to share before we start getting ready to close out through that whole experience that you talked about? I love that you have a way of tracking and making sure that truly every student is accounted for. And I know you from the core and who you are personally in that realm. And so for others to be able to hear that leadership journey of you and what you've done within Leander ISD is pretty amazing, Bruce.
Here's the one thing that I've learned over this time. I've been at superintendent for 16 years now. And here's the one thing that I've learned that I would ask you to really think about. It is extremely tempting to get caught up in the lag measure. So we often define our success by the number that gets published to the community in accountability system. And I say the state accountability system. If you pay attention to that, you will force yourself down a path of action that is completely and solely related to that outcome. And that is not what's going to get your students where they need to be. So make sure that you are aware of your lag measures. and that you know what they are and that you understand what other leg measures you're tracking, but don't focus on them. Focus on the work that you're doing and the leading measures and the celebrations that you have as you make progress and you show growth, because that is the one thing that really inspires and motivates people when they see progress being made in things that matter to them. And if you can just connect those two things together, that is what will fuel your system and eventually cause the transformation. And then you have to be really patient. You have to be very patient. These things come slowly, and you have to keep the pressure on.
Well, talk about a district leader that is building future-ready little human beings, right? From the start of school all the way until they graduate. I mean, Bruce, your system is a human-centered school system that you are heading in Leander ISD. And so where can people learn more about the work that you've led or are leading in Leander Independent School District?
We try to be as transparent as possible. If you go to our website, you will find all of this information that we've talked about. You can find our community-based accountability report that we put out to the community every year. We have three of those out now. You can find our strategic plan. You can find that data. You can find anything that you need to see what our student experience and our staff experience looks like in Leander ISD. But, you know, I encourage you to come see for yourself. There's no better way to understand the system than to come inside and see the work that we're doing. We're not perfect by any means. We have lots of areas to grow still. We're continually searching those out and trying to figure out what we can do better. But we'd love to talk to you. We'd love to learn from you as well. So come see us. Let's start a conversation.
All right. So from the heart of leadership to the future of the classroom, our conversation with Dr. Bruce Gehring has been a powerful reminder, guys, that vision is really nothing without culture, and innovation is not anything without equity. And so I just want to say a huge thank you, Bruce, for your time and just sharing your wisdom. And my hope is that leaders around the state, around the nation that just listen to this, get some inspiration from your words of wisdom that you shared with us. Any final words?
Just thank you so much for having me. It's a privilege to be a part of public education in the great state of Texas. Mm-hmm. I say it all the time, but the future of our communities, the future of our state, the future of our nation, the future of our globe is sitting inside our public schools right now. Mm-hmm. It is our responsibility to make sure that they are readying themselves for the future.
I totally agree with you. I say that our democracy depends on an educated populace, and it starts right in our public school system. So I just want to thank you. Thank you so much for being a part of this. I'm always inspired every time I hear you, Bruce. You have just been such a visionary leader ever since I've known you, over 20 years now. That's pretty amazing when I think back to that. Time is like a snap, right?
Always my pleasure. Thank you.